Well, good evening. Welcome back from Canada.
Thank you.
On Women's Day.
Yeah.
Yes. So glad.
Good to be here.
You were missed. And Marie, welcome back from exotic climes, and just like they're supposed to be, it looks like on Facebook. New Orleans and
actually Memphis.
Memphis.
Yeah, Memphis, Tennessee. And then Los Angeles, so, which is exotic.
a lot of, and the train, the whole thing.
Yeah.
You did it right. So let's do introductions around. I don't think everybody knows everybody.
Judy.
Jeffrey. Bill.
Ron.
Lee.
Samia.
Paul.
Marie.
Ellie.
So we just started last week with Suzuki Roshi's book on branching streams flow in the darkness. Very stunning title. I'm looking for a wonderful title. That's a really good one. It's from a line in the poem of Sekito. This very not such a long, it's not a sutra, it's a poem that he wrote as a teaching that's recited in every Zendo. Instead of the Heart Sutra sometimes, or as well as the Heart Sutra. So it's kind of conventional in a way, except like the Heart Sutra, it doesn't make sense in the way that we like to think things make sense. Although ultimately it makes the best sense because it brings up both sides. It isn't laying out one side in one line, in a logical line. It brings up one side and then the other side, and allows us to entertain the experience of considering that they might both be true. Amazing, how can that be? We're in such a radically black and white kind of world and mind that it takes an extra step of thought and intuition to entertain that extra step. And yet that's what happens in Zazen. Zazen itself is that extra step where we our logical thinking and all our other thinking are all in there together, bumping into each other, and after a while it gets sort of tedious, and then we realize it's just stuff going on in our mind. It has really nothing to do with what we are, as we are, as we live and breathe, as they say. So Suzuki Roshi starts out with the title, Things As It Is, which he's famous for. He doesn't say things as they are. He says, things as it is. So already he's creating a much bigger picture than we generally think. It's based on the first lines, the mind of the great sage of India, Buddha, is intimately transmitted from west to east. intimately transmitted, as intimately as it could possibly get, mind to mind. So he talks about Sekito a bit, and I have a sort of rundown of some of Sekito's experiences before he finished his seeking that I will leave here for people to pick up if you want one. He says that Soto Zen comes from Nangaku, the line of Nangaku. There were two teachers. The one that Weineng, if you remember Weineng's story, bested in the poetry. He wrote a poem that his teacher gave him the robe for. But the other teacher was also a very fine one and went north, and Weineng went south. So there, for a while, when we were taught about it in America, we were taught that there was a big split. I think we like big splits in America because that's how we do things, right? But there wasn't such a big split. There was just a different ways of seeing the same thing and different ways of teaching the same thing, which you will discover if you have not already in every teacher that you encounter. Everyone has a different flavor for the same basic taste. So he said the way of Seigen, and Sekito was more gentle, more gentle quality. They call it the elder brother's way in Japan. He said Nangaku was like the second or third child, and he was a little naughty. And it reminded me very much of my teacher, who was quite a bit naughty, actually, as part of the tradition of Sekito and the Soto Zen tradition. His way, says Suzuki, was to find everything within himself. It's to realize the great mind that includes everything and to practice accordingly. So Suzuki Roshi has often talked about big mind. Dogen talked about big mind, as you recall, as one of the three characteristics of a Tenzo. So he says, big mind within which everything exists. And already that's saying too much, because it's creating a thing in which everything exists, and it isn't like that. It's that everything exists, period. Completely and entirely and dynamically. He says, Sando Kai means things, same things. To identify one thing with another is do. It refers to one's whole being, which here means great mind or big mind. So our understanding, he says, is that there is one whole being that includes everything, and that the many things are found in one whole being. Although we say many beings, they are actually many parts of one whole being that includes everything. If you say many, it is many, and if you say one, it's one. Many and one are different ways of describing one whole being. To completely understand the relationship between one great whole being and the many facets of that one great whole being is Kai. Kai means to shake hands. I like that. Sando Kai. One whole being shaking hands. You have a feeling of friendship, he says. So, what is the oneness of one and many? How can we say? So that's the title. He says, it's very much like, it is the title of a Taoist book as well, but it's somewhat the same, but a little bit different. Small mind, he says, is the mind that is under the limitation of desires, or some particular emotional covering, or the discrimination of good and bad. So it's ordinary mind. Small mind is just our ordinary, everyday mind. I like this, I don't like that. I'm mad at her, and I adore that one. And we go through our life picking and choosing. And so he says, even though we think we're observing things as it is, with a great mind, we're really not, because of our desire and the way we discriminate and choose the things we like from the things we don't like, and how we reject what we think is bad, even though it may not be bad at all. In fact, the truth is we hardly understand ourselves, much less anybody else. So it's very hard to make strict definitions of goodness and badness in people or really anything else. It's all relative. So the Buddhist way is to try hard to let go of this kind of emotional discrimination of good and bad, to let go of our prejudices and to see things as it is. He says it's not to get rid of desires, because we can't. Our desires are our survival mechanism. It's built into our wiring. But our desires are many and easily get out of control. So if we have one potato chip, we tend to want a lot more. In the garden, if I start gardening, I can't stop. It's just like eating potato chips. It's a kind of crazy desire. And those are simple examples, but we have so many of them that run our life. And if we want a place to live, that's one kind of desire, because that's natural. But if we want a 4,000 square foot house, that's another kind. If we want to sleep, it's a very good idea. We can't function without sleeping. But if we sleep all day and all night, it's stupid. And it's a kind of lust for being out of here in some way. So all the five desires are like that, for food and for shelter and for sex and for what's the fourth one? Food, sex, shelter. What else do we desperately need besides the last one, which is being known?
Sleep.
Food, sex, shelter, sleep. Oh, it is sleep. Thank you, Bill. So the last one is a great desire for fame. Fame and fortune. And it's inevitable that being known, which we all need, without which we really cannot function, if it's ramped up, becomes a kind of sickness. So these are really important to understand. And he's saying that's the point, is to understand how this works in us. make it a study and notice and just recognize, oh, here it is. It's like the precepts. No, we can't make us be something else except in knowing what it is that this is as it shows up moment by moment. We're always surprising ourselves. We say things we don't mean. We say things that, or do things that we say we would never do, and then we do them. And the more conscious we can be of how this operation in the world, the dynamic of the world and the self and the body and the mind, the breath and the blood, all is working together. If we're aware of it, it becomes not so narrow and so constrained and so awkward. We don't fall over ourselves so much when we're aware of what's going on in us in the biggest sense and the smallest sense both. Buddha's way, he says, is the study and teaching of human nature, including how foolish we are, what kinds of desires we have, our preferences and tendencies. Without sticking to something, I try to remember to use the expression liable to. We are liable to, or we have a tendency to do something. He says this is his motto. And then he talks about self-respect. He says, when you're just you, without thinking or trying to say something special, just saying what's in your mind and how you feel, then there's naturally self-respect. And I would say confidence also. That we don't have to put on a show or a mask or be something special. We're special already, just as we are, though we hardly ever quite believe that. He says, when you feel that you're somebody, you have to practice Zazen harder. He says, you know, it's difficult to sit without thinking or feeling. When you don't think or feel, you usually fall asleep. But without sleeping and without thinking, just to be yourself is our practice. When you can do that, you'll be able to speak without thinking too much and without having any special purpose. When you speak or act, it will just be to express yourself. This is complete self-respect. You must be strict with yourself and especially with your tendencies. We each have our own unique personal tendencies, but if you try to get rid of them, or if you try not to think or not to hear the sound of the stream during Zazen, it's not possible. Let your ears hear without trying to hear. Let the mind think without trying to think and without trying to stop it. This is the most basic instruction. Every time I talk to someone who doesn't know anything about meditation, the first thing they say is, oh, I can't make my mind stop. I can't make it stop. And I have to say, no. You'd be dead if it weren't working. It's how it works. In the hospital, when the line is straight, that's when they unplug you because you're done. So the line is supposed to go up and down like this. Don't try to stop thinking. But, as he says, in the power and the strength of practice, if you practice hard, We'll come to a place of the whole being. Our mind quiets down all by itself. The more we allow it to be what it wants to be, the more it wants to be quiet. There's a very deep, quiet, peaceful place in every one of us. And it's always, always waiting for us to connect. He says, we say that Zen is not something to talk about. It is what you experience in a true sense. It is difficult. But anyway, this is a difficult world, so don't worry. Wherever you go, you have problems. You should confront your problems. It may be much better to have these problems of practice rather than some other mixed up kinds of problems. Then he does a little riff on strict practice, which he's very much for. That's within the strict rule, there is complete freedom. And that's the Japanese way. There's a very interesting young woman who spent 3 years in a Japanese monastery and ran a blog all the time she was there with all her emotional problems and all her very poetic and brilliant insights. It was very fun to read. And suddenly she decided that she would come back to America, and she was on my inbox today in Green Gulch and talking about the difference between American Zen and Japanese Zen, and saying that the Japanese Zen, as Suzuki is expressing it here, as was a very strict way, and that she felt once she understood it and how to do it, it felt very free. She always knew exactly what to do. She said one monastery where she practiced, she had to stand up in a certain way, put on her clothes in a certain way, pick up her spoon in a certain way. Everything was a rule. She said being at Green Gulch is amazing. She said you can just walk around with a piece of toast. You can, you know, make yourself a peanut butter sandwich anytime you want to. There's so much more lackadaisical, from her point of view, way of going about it. And yet she's finding value in it as well, and saying that it's the American way. She says she doesn't want to call it Zen anymore. She thinks Zen is just not a helpful word. She calls it truth. She says there's the truth, Japanese truth, and the American truth. And now she's learning this new way in her own home country. So are there questions? Comments?
Question about whether you ever, or this group ever chants the Sandokan.
Have I ever done that?
Do we ever chant it?
We have not, but we should. Now that we're doing this, I suggest that we do it every time that we meet. It would be very nice. Yes. So that's the next step in this process.
In English?
In English. Yes, would you rather have it in Japanese?
No.
It's right here.
That's the American truth.
That's right.
Yeah,
do
it the American way. Right. Yeah. Chikudo daisen no shin tozai mitsuni aifusu ninkon ni ridon ari. etc. It's right here in characters as well. Well, I'll make copies of it, and we'll start next week.
Or I can make them so they fit like in the little box.
Oh, what a good idea!
Yeah, because it's easier to handle a really big piece of paper, and the font's kind of small in that book. So
it is small.
If you would let me, I would make it.
I would love it if you made it, and even put it on the Facebook site. Mm-hmm. You think?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to have English on? Can we fit English on the whole on one page? I don't know. Let's see what we can do. English on one side, Japanese on the other side, just in case you ever.
It's not very long. It's just like that.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.
22 couplets, I think.
Take off a couplet?
No, I said 22 couplets.
22 couplets,
yeah.
He chanted it at Tassahara, so that's where I know it.
Yeah.
Seems like they chant it a lot, and I don't go very often. It's like 3 or 4 days, and it seems like I hear it a lot, so he might do it every day.
Yeah, I think if there are more sittings than one, that they mm-hmm. it's one of the things they do. That's what they did at Pureg. So, Bill?
Well, as you make copies, you know, there are two versions in the book, the Green Gulch version in the front and the Hiroshi's in the back. And I don't know, I haven't compared them, but it's just something to consider. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one that we always used with Coben was the one in the front. But well, we can talk about that.
And
it's hard to decide.
We'll chant it right before we start the talk, or?
No, in the service.
In the service?
Yeah.
Like after the Heart Sutra?
We can do the Heart Sutra and then the Sandokai. Yeah.
So I have another question. If someone else has a question about liable to? I didn't get that part. So, you know, his motto being liable to. Following that.
Well, I think he was talking about proclivity. He was liable to leave his umbrella anywhere he went. He always left it behind. And sometimes he joked about it as one of those things about himself he just didn't know what to do about. But he was very aware of it. He was very absent-minded. You know, the most famous story of that is that he took a bath with his wife in the big bath downstairs, and when he was done, he toweled off and went upstairs, and he closed the door and it was locked and left her in there all night and never missed her, and it was just sort of so that was his one of the things that he was paying very close attention to and feeling sorry about and embarrassed about, and also telling about and not trying to hide. I think that's the message in this. That he said we're all foolish, and we are in different ways. So recognizing our foolishness is a big step.
Did he write this book in English or in Japanese?
There are talks that he gave that were recorded and then edited with the help of I don't know who. It's an early book, so probably Richard Baker had a great deal to do with it.
So I was just thinking that he used the word libel to that has a kind of two ways of looking at it. I'm liable to, well, I might do it. I'm liable to, I'm guilty of.
Well, it's true in legal terms, it's true.
So from what you have that. What you just said about
he's
absent-minded and does something weird, he feels guilty later. So I mean, maybe not guilty, but
they're not
apologetic.
The
no, they're not trying to sing. So close.
Close, but you see that.
I am certainly liable for a lot of.
There's liable for and liable to. I think that's the difference.
Thank you for sharing those Suzuki anecdotes, because I had heard those. And, knowing that we're all liable, we all have these tendencies, and they're all uniquely our own. You know,
yes.
One person is more tempted at the sight of the refrigerator.
Exactly. Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and someone may deny themselves that half hour of sleep,
mm-hmm.
or. Deny themselves in the way of staying up too late, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or go on and on and on verbally.
Yes.
I want to know, you know, I'm going to cut it short.
Yeah.
So, yeah. When I am engaged with all the beings in this universe, I'm most intimate with my own, but you do catch other people as well in that. And those of us who work in a sangha and practice together are intimate about our own as well. You know?
Oh yes,
yeah.
Yes we are.
So I mean, if you go to a sesshin, for example,
mm-hmm.
within a week. There's many things revealed.
Absolutely. Shockingly. Somebody just asked me the other day, he said he does his sesshins all by himself in the desert. What's the point of going to sesshin? And I said, oh, you don't understand. It's all about the people. It's all about being in silence with people and becoming more and more intimate with those that you're practicing with, and realizing where Buddha lies. You know, it's not out there in the desert in some blast of recognition in the head. It's somewhere else. More like in the elbows and the knees and the belly and the heart and everything that happens at Sesshin, as you wash the dishes and you sweep the decks and struggle to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and all of those things. It makes a life in community, which, oh, thank you, Kelly.
I lost your place.
Oh, that's all right. Sorry, Suzuki. Sorry. And Sekito, too. So Sekito is the one who also wrote the Hokyo Zamai, the Precious Mirror Samadhi poem, which was saying the same thing in an even more mysterious way, and also very, very beautiful. So maybe one of these days we can do that one too. It's Ron's nodding his head.
We did it once, yeah.
We did do it long, long ago.
But I know it was difficult.
Yes.
To teach, I think. There isn't. Is there a good text to use? I don't know. There are a lot of different translations, but
I don't know what's extant now. That was what, 10, 12 years ago?
It was a while ago.
So there are new translations of everything coming out all the time. So it's worth a search to see what's there. Though I love the poetry of it, I almost know it by heart. So, like a baby that goes wah wah. I love that. Like looking in a precious mirror in which you see your own reflection. It's not what you are, it is what you are. Not what it is, it is what you are. That was his basic insight. He had that insight when he looked into water and saw his reflection. And he finally understood where he was stuck.
Could you say that phrase again, please?
You are not what it is. It is what you are. No, it's like Dogen saying body and mind drop off.
Last week, we had a handout that you taught us. I meant to bring it and to read it again. I didn't. But wasn't it written by someone about a century before this author? And I'm wondering what's the relationship between that poem and that.
And this?
And
it's the same person. It says Dongzhong Lingji,
yes,
which is a Chinese name.
Oh, okay.
And then, remember last week, you couldn't remember that third name. And it's Shitu.
Shitu.
Yeah.
Thank
Say
you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. It's so confusing.
Oh.
It's, it's just unbelievably confusing if you try to follow all the names and figure them out, because there are several Chinese, different Chinese ways of saying them in English, and then the Japanese ways are also different, several different ways, and the Sino-Japanese way is different from the Japanese way. I mean, it's just so don't worry about it. This is a long, long time ago, so you don't have to exactly be accurate. He was a wonderful, wonderful, insightful teacher, and that's really all we need to know. Oh, it's after 8 o'clock. So we had best stop. We have a one-day sit on Saturday. I hope y'all can come. Bring a lunch if you stay all day. 9 to 4. 1 minute sit.